Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashtaja Visitani Jaya Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today is a very special day. We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the very last verses. I believe we'll start...
20.
On 20. Okay, so we're doing 20, 21, 22, and 23. Now, although there's a purport in 21, I'm actually going to read through and chant responsibly the last verse, text 23, since it's such an important verse. We also are trying to cover today Srila Prabhupada's acceptance of sannyas and Vajrapurnima. And the importance of the verse itself. So I'll probably be buzzing through quickly a lot of material here today. So bear with me. Okay, so we're just going to start. Let us read together from text 20. Namastasmai Bhagavate Vasudevaya Sakshine Ya Idam Kripaya Kasmai Yacha Chakche Mamukshave. We offer obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudev, the all-pervading witness, who mercifully explained this science to Brahma when he anxiously desired salvation. 21. Yogindraya namastasmai sukhaya brahma-rupine samsara sarpatashtam yo vishnu-ratam anuchaya. I offer my humble obeisances to Sri Shukadeva Goswami, the best of the mystic sages and a personal manifestation of the absolute truth. He saved Maharaj Parikshit, who was bitten by the snake of material existence. Report by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Sutta Goswami now offers obeisances to his own spiritual master, Shukadeva Goswami. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur clarifies that just as Arjuna was placed into material confusion so the Bhagavad Gita might be spoken, so King Parikshit, a pure, liberated devotee of the Lord, was cursed to die so the Srimad Bhagavatam might be spoken. Actually, King Parikshit is Vishnu Rata, eternally under the protection of the Lord. Shukadeva Goswami liberated the king from his so-called illusion to exhibit the merciful nature of a pure devotee and the enlightening effect of his association. 22. Bhave bhave yata bhakti adayosta vajayate tata purushpa devesha natas kvam yokita prabho. O Lord of Lord, O Master, please grant us pure devotional service at your lotus feet, life after life. And 23 will do responsibly. Nama sankirtanam yasya.
Nama sankirtanam yasya.
Sarva papa pranashayam.
Sarva papa pranashayam.
Pranamo dukha shamanas.
Pranamo dukha shamanas.
Tang namami harim param.
Tang namami harim param.
Nama sankirtanam yasya.
Nama sankirtanam yasya.
Sarva papa pranashayam.
Sarva papa pranashayam.
Pranamo dukha shamanas.
Pranamo dukha shamanas.
Tang namami harim param.
Tang namami harim param.
Others?
Nam sankirtanam yasya.
Nam sankirtanam yasya.
Sarva papa pranashanam.
Sarva papa pranashanam.
Pranamo dukha shamanas.
Pranamo dukha shamanas.
Tang namami harim param.
Tang namami harim param.
Nama sankirtanam.
Vaishnavis, Sankirtanam. The congregational chanting of the holy name. Yasya. Of whom? Sarva Papa. All sins. Pranashanam. Which destroys. Pranama. The bowing down. Dukkha. Misery. Shamana. Which subdues. Tum. To him. Namami, I offer my obeisances. Harim, to Lord Hari. Param, the Supreme. Translation, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Hari, the congregational chanting of whose holy name destroys all sinful reactions and offering of obeisances unto whom relieves all material suffering. Thus ends the purport of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 12th canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. The 12th canto was completed in Gainesville, Florida, on Sunday, July 18th, 1982. Yes. Om Agyanat Girandjana Savakaya Chaksumitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Vanchakalpa Drugascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitano Pavanibhyo Vaishabhibhyo Namo Namaha. So this has been a long journey through the Srimad Bhagavatam. I came to Lachua, I think, 2005, and I mean, my first notes that I have in my files was giving class on the sixth canto, and that was 14 years ago. So assuming it probably took at least 20 years to go through the entire Bhagavatam, wow. I was actually calculating 18,000 verses doing 5 days a week. Even if you did 3 to 4 verses a day, it would take 20 years. So, you know, some verses only have long purports, and we only cover one, and some more. So it's understandable, but it's amazing that we've completed the Bhagavatam and now ready to start over. Also, and as a note, we actually ended Srila Prabhupada's purports, what, 13th chapter, 10th canto, in 2010. So it's been 9 years since we've actually had Srila Prabhupada's purports that we've been studying. Although obviously we our speakers include so much of Prabhupada's material. Actually, when we first came to that point, we in the management, the leadership, we discussed, should we just now start back again with the first canto, or do we continue on? You know, because there's some discussion we should only read Srila Prabhupada's. But we concluded that Prabhupada would want us to complete the Bhagavatam. I mean, and I was thinking about how important this material is. First of all, we had all of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka in the 10th canto. In the 11th canto, you have, what, 23 chapters of the Uddhava Gita? Amazing instructions. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said about this, this is a purport to 3.4.32, undoubtedly Bhagavad Gita was spoken by the Lord on the battlefield of Kurukshetra just to encourage Arjuna to fight. And yet, to complete the transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord instructed Uddhava. The Lord wanted Uddhava to fulfill his mission and disseminate knowledge which he had not spoken even in Bhagavad Gita. In other words, again, giving emphasis. So there's a lot of the same subject matters in Bhagavad Gita, but we all remember from recently studying how deeply Krishna goes into all of his instructions. So I found that very, very nice to go through that systematically. Then there's all sorts of other things in there. There's the nine Yogendras, all their instructions, and so many other things. What? 11th canto. Oh, what Prabhupada said that in 3.4.32. That's where he taught. There's other places, I'm sure, but that's one where he discusses the importance of the Uddhava Gita. And in the 12th canto, we had verses that we've all known as, to some degree, because probably quote them a lot, the descriptions of Kali Yuga. Very vivid. And, of course, the importance of the Sankirtan movement in alleviating the miseries of this Kali Yuga. So, very, very important information. My personal opinion also is, this is just my own opinion, that I found, I don't want to say surprisingly, I mean, I found the purports to be very well written, very clear, very organized, and very instructive, as well as the actual verse themselves. And, of course, we can all, I think, give a little bit of thanks. I mean, first of all, to our authors, Rita and Anamaraj, Gopi Puranadana, who did so much work on this, and also to our very, very special Bhakti Vedanta Book Trust editor, Dravida Prabhu. Dravida has been editing these books for, I don't know how many, 45 years, and one of the reasons why the writing is so well done. So thanks again. So anyway, and I also wanted to mention that, particularly in as we went later into the later cantos, much of this material was really directly from the Acharyas. I was just thinking that this particular purport we just read a couple of verses ago, plus the Bhadra Purnima purport, I was checking with Vishnu Chakravarti Kaur's commentary, and they're almost identical. And so you see that many, many things, very, very important. In fact, usually when I've been giving classes on these verses, I always read Vishwanath's too, and a lot of times I find there's no difference. You know, it's pretty much the same material. And also Sridhar Swami, Madhvacharya, others have been quoted extensively. So I think that we found that not only was this very, very wonderful verses, but the purports and commentaries were very much in line with our Acharyas. And so I think it's a great benefit. And having said that, I'm also excited to return to the first canto and to Prabhupada's purports. So you'll see that we're going to spend a little extra time as we begin. The schedule will be that we'll have, you know, many senior devotees giving classes, and we'll be covering, I think, the forward introduction. I think we have three classes on the first verse, because there's like 10 pages of purport. Similarly, second and third, we have a couple extra days on. So we're going to be covering this real well, because Prabhupada put so much of his heart, his wisdom, his realization into these, not only the first cantos, but even the first few verses of the Bhagavatam. So that's going to be, I think, a real highlight to thoroughly study these first part of the Srimad Bhagavatam again. So, also, today is the day of Srila Prabhupada's taking sannyas. I won't say a lot about that. We read this morning how Prabhupada felt that his real preaching work would begin with his taking of sannyas. And, you know, whenever Prabhupada talks about it, he's very, very humble. You know, like, here's one excerpt from Prabhupada said. So, my Guru Maharaj ordered me. When I was a manager in Bose's laboratory, he ordered me. So I thought, I cannot do this. I cannot accept sannyas. But he was so kind, and he is so kind still. And he forced me. You must do it. Pulling my ear, he brought me to this line. In the beginning, I was not willing. So it is his causeless mercy upon me. I can now understand how much I have been relieved by accepting this life. Now, why does Prabhupada speak this way? How difficult it was for him to take sannyas? You know, Prabhupada was 100% renounced any material desire of any material. He wanted to show us that it's not an easy thing, not a cheap thing. So he used himself as an example. This was difficult, giving up family life, so many things, so that we would know the gravity of taking sannyas. And we've seen it's not always so easy, particularly many of our young sannyasis had difficulty. So the significance to us is that I think Srila Prabhupada, the way he describes it, now of course he's not bound by any psychological conditioning, but he describes that by taking sannyas he felt free to preach widely. Now he was ready, taking sannyas, to travel to the West, to preach strongly. He would have anyway in any ashram or any order of life, but this gave him even extra emphasis. And he also mentions in another conversation, he said, this is our line. You know, that our great acharyas all, you know, took sannyas, etc., etc. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas for the purpose of preaching, and he was following those footsteps. At any rate, by Prabhupada's doing that, coming to the West, preaching strongly as a sannyas, we are all here in this room. So we're so grateful to Srila Prabhupada to take the austerity and the renunciation that he did to bring us all Krishna consciousness. Okay. Now, today is also Bhadra Purnima, full moon of the month of Bhadra. Now, interestingly, we never really paid a lot of attention to this until a couple years ago, did we? I mean, I think Vaisheshika is the one who sort of encouraged and promoted the site of Bhadra Purnima because he found, I guess, I'm sure many other people read it, but probably didn't take it, you know, the same way that he did it as a wonderful opportunity for book distribution. So today being Gaur Purnima, and a wonderful day for distributing the Srimad Bhagavatam and reviewing when we're completing the Bhagavatam on Prabhupada's Sannyas Day, I think is a very, very auspicious day and a wonderful day to distribute the Srimad Bhagavatam. Just to repeat again, on Bhadra Purnima, this was text 13, which... I forget who gave the class. Was it Prangavinda? Anyway, just a few days ago, was text 13. If on the full moon of the month of Bhadra, one places Srimad Bhagavatam on a golden throne and gives it as a gift, he will attain the supreme transcendental destination. Yeah. You gave that class, right?
Yeah.
Yes, very nice. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur does mention that this is a metaphor. In other words, you don't have to literally take your Bhagavatam set, put it on a golden throne to give it to somebody. I mean, you know, you can just give them the book. It's just fine. That's fine. But it's a beautiful metaphor because, I love the are we going to do the golden throne again tonight? Yeah, I love the golden throne on Sunday, the Bhagavatam. Why? Because it is the king of all literature. And we know that the Bhagavatam is equally worshipable as the Lord himself, right?
Yes.
Krishna, Bhagavat, the Bhagavatam are identical, non-different. So just like we can offer our teak, we can worship the Bhagavatam as a deity. So it's totally appropriate. And then there's an explanation of how on this particular day, the sun is in Leo, very exalted. It's part of the metaphor of the golden throne. So wonderful day for the distribution of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You get special benefit. I think you go back to Godhead or something, don't you? Let's see. No, I know. Maybe I'm making that up. No, one attained the supreme transcendental destination by distributing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Pretty good. So I think we're... It will also help to read the Bhagavatam, too. Very good point. Prabhupada said that. He says, you don't just distribute my books, you have to read my books. So read the Srimad Bhagavatam and encourage those who we distributed to read the Bhagavatam for the greatest benefit. I had Srivindavan told me a few minutes ago that we were up to 34 full sets, and I think he said maybe even a little bit more. We were going for 40 initially. I think we can do 50. So, by the way, I gave my 199. First set. Everyone should do this. Even say, well, I already have a set. No, donate. You know, sponsor a set for others to give out books. So, I mean, 50 sets of $200. How much money is that? $10? No.
$1,000.
No.
$1,000 for 200 sets.
No, each set is $200. Five sets would be $1,000. 50 would be $10,000. That's $10,000 to the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust for us purchasing books to distribute, including this Bhagavatam. So that's wonderful. You know. Anyway, come tonight if you can. If not, see Sri Vrindavan. Call the office. Make your pledges, donations. Okay, that's the end of my fun drive. Okay. Let's get today's verse. Wonderful verse and auspicious verse to end our Srimad Bhagavatam journey. So, Nam Sankirtan is the first word in this verse. I lost it. Isn't it? Yes, Nama Sankirtan Nisha. And what is the benefit of this Nama Sankirtan? Two things are described. Sarva Papa Prasanam. It destroys all sins. And Dukkha Samana. It subdues misery. Now, we know that the holy name also gives us love of God. And that's what we are very interested in. But I was thinking, why is this emphasized then? Well, because we've been talking in the 12th canto about Kali Yuga. And what are the symptoms of Kali Yuga? Age of sinfulness and age of misery, right? So the fact that the holy name destroys sins and alleviates misery, it's very, very salient points for all of us because that's what we experience here. And then once one's misery is a little bit relieved, one then can also relish the nectar of the holy name.
But the idea is that there's great benefit and benediction for us as age. And the Srimad Bhagavatam confirms this in so many places. There's so many nice verses that are cited. How this is really the process for this age. And earlier in the third chapter of the 12th canto, a couple of the verses were, "My dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of fault, there's still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and promoted to the transcendental kingdom. Whatever result was there in former ages can be obtained in Kali Yuga simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra." So we have this confirmation that this is the process, this is the way of becoming purified, becoming relieved from sinful activities in the age of Kali. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, "A person who chants the holy name of Krishna once can counteract the resultant actions of more sinful activities than he's able to perform." I don't have the citation. Anybody know where that's found?
That's quoted from somewhere.
I don't know if it's actually a verse in CC or if it's a quotation in CC. Anyway, but it's from CC. Now, how does this work? Well, we have many wonderful examples. The Bhagavatam doesn't just throw these things out, but it gives us examples. It gives us wonderful stories and so many ways that we can understand this. And of course, one of our most famous stories we all know from the sixth canto is the story of Ajamil. We all know that Ajamil was a Brahmin, became sinful, was on his deathbed, he had named his son Narayan, called the name Narayan, and then he was saved. That's the Reader's Digest version when we're short on time. Okay, now, there's three wonderful chapters here, 1, 2, and 3, that describe the story of Ajamil, then describes how the Yamadutas come for him, then how the Yamadutas intercede, then there's a discussion between the Vishnudutas and the Yamadutas where they preach to them, and then they go back bewildered to Yamaraj, and then the third chapter, I think, Yamaraj then preaches to the Yamadutas and explains so much knowledge. And these are just wonderful chapters. And they follow, as you remember, the end of the fifth canto, which is talking about the hellish planets. So Maharaj Parikshit saying, how can people be saved from this out of his compassion? And therefore, Shukadeva Goswami then tells him, this is how even a sinful person can be saved by the holy name. Yamaraj says in the third chapter, "Therefore, it should be understood that one can easily be relieved from all sinful reactions by chanting the holy name of the Lord and chanting of his qualities and activities. This is the only process recommended for relief from sinful reactions. Even if one chants the holy name of the Lord with improper pronunciation, he will achieve relief from material bondage if he chants without offense. Ajamil, for example, was extremely sinful, but while dying, he merely chanted the holy name, and although calling his son, he achieved complete liberation because he remembered the name of Narayan." So how does this work? What are the mechanisms here? You remember one of the examples, Maharaj Parikshit said, the problem with sinful activity and doing atonement is what? The person repeats the process. It doesn't really work. He gives example, famous example of what animal?
Elephant
rolling in the dust, and then goes in the bays in the river, gets clean, and rolls in the dust all over again. So this is what it's like, you know, the sin and confess routine that we sometimes see in Christianity and other religions, or in Hindu religions or others, you know, where one forms punya or prayaschita, it's called some atonement, and then just goes back to their sinful life. So Vishvachakravarti Thakura explains that there's actually three types of suffering, or there's three steps in this process of relief from sinful activities. First of all, there's the relief from the sinful reaction, papam, itself. In other words, we've all committed so many sinful activities, we begin the process of bhakti, of chanting, we are relieved from much of the reaction of a sinful activity. Doesn't mean that we're not ever going to suffer anything, but we're relieved from so much. Prabhupada gave the example that the knife that cuts the hand was meant to cut your throat. You know, he gave that example of how we're relieved from sinful activity. But there's also the desire. And Vishnu says that the seed of sin, the bija, is then relieved, is purified. So that avoids that sin and atone type of response that ignorant people do in this material world. And then the third part is the underlying propensity towards sinful activity, which is caused by ignorance or avidya. So he says, first, the holy name destroys papam, then bija, then avidya. So in this way, sinful activity is completely eradicated through the chanting of the holy name. But there needs to be a practice. To become purified, there's a process. Every spiritual path actually has some process. If you're doing dhyana or yoga, meditation, there's some practice one has to do. You don't just say, now I'm pure, now I am enlightened. No, you have to work towards that practice. Now, of course, many of our practices today are not bona fide. People try so many things. They do yoga, which is really just exercise. Or they say, I'm doing Ashtanga yoga. Well, nobody can do Ashtanga yoga, you know, the Eightfold Process by Patanjali. I remember when I was, just before I became a devotee, there were a lot of groups around at that time, that came from India. And there was one group that was very popular with meditation, mantra meditation. I found out later, they gave you a secret mantra, your own personal secret mantra. I found out later it was mostly the same mantra they gave to everybody. And all it was a simple beach mantra that we use, for Gayatri and deity worship. Anyway, this is the bona fide process. The bona fide process of bhakti yoga as prescribed in our scriptures, from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's a process of purification. And it has to be a very deep, fundamental change on a spiritual level. Actually, many people want change. That's why they look for these different movements. They look for these processes because they're not quite happy. They know that things are not right. I remember when I first became a devotee, it was actually a great feeling of relief that, oh, things aren't okay. I'm not just a pessimist. In other words, we're not pessimists, Prabhupada said, we're realists. We're realistic about the miseries of birth, death, disease, and old age. We're realistic about this material world as a place of suffering. Doesn't mean that one's a bummer or negative, like sometimes religious people are accused of. And I found it a great relief, actually. Yeah, I was right. Things are pretty bad. So everybody, a lot of people, I wouldn't say everybody, some people just want to be in blissful ignorance, but many people feel that way, and a lot of people are feeling a lot of unhappiness, a lot of misery. Both mental, especially in Kali Yuga, mental misery as well as physical misery. So thus, people are looking for some cause and looking for ways to become happy. And we see this popularity of yoga or New Age ideas or health, vegetarianism even, environmental issues, because they are looking. But one might be interested in these things, but to have fundamental change of one's consciousness is a little more difficult. My experience in counseling is that behavioral change is difficult for people, but it's possible through work and introspection and changing one's habits. Personality change is even more difficult. One's basic personality doesn't change a lot. In fact, therapists find that personality disorders are very intractable. They're the most difficult, actually, for people to change. But that's even not getting at the spiritual level. So the real change is the change of heart, the change of consciousness. And that's a permanent, eternal change. It's a qualitative change in one's life. It's not superficial. And that is, of course, on one hand, very difficult. On the other hand, very easy if one takes to the process of Krishna consciousness. That fundamental change can come about through the chanting of the holy name. So that's our primary process that Srila Prabhupada gave us, his chanting. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami describes 64 processes. Then he says of those, 5 are the best, which we know, Srimad Bhagavatam, deity worship, Harinam, the holy name, Sadhusanga, and residing in a holy place. And then, of those 5, it's determined that of these, chanting is the best. And in verse 1, 2, 2, 30, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami quotes the verse 2.1.11, the one that chanting the holy name is the doubtless and fearless way of success for all. That's a short version of it. And then Vishwanath's commentary on this is, I thought, quite nice. You know, he has kind of a charming way of writing, I think. And he says, among the angas of bhakti, which is ascertained as king? This verse answers, chanting the name of the Lord is the principal method. Among all angas, the chief ones are hearing, chanting, and remembering, right? Shravanam, Kirtam, Vishnu, Smarana. Among these three, chanting is the chief. Among the different types of chanting, glorifying the names, pastimes, and qualities of the Lord, chanting the name of the Lord is supreme. So, Acharyas confirmed so many ways and citing so many verses how the chanting is the supreme process. And one doesn't have to be highly elevated to be able to chant Hare Krishna, or even highly purified in the beginning. We know that even the beginning stages is great benefit. This was part of which is a whole other pastime, of Haridas Thakur, when he was challenged about the power of the holy name, and he said, even in the beginning stages, the Namabhasa stage, or Abhasa Rupa stage, that there's great value. He said, even a faint light from the holy name of the Lord can eradicate all the reactions of sinful life. So this Abhasa Rupa or Namabhasa stage, it's the intermediate stage. First there's the offensive stage, then the clearing stage or intermediate stage, and finally the pure stage. The pure stage of chanting. But even if one is not at the pure stage of chanting, for those of us in the more intermediate stage, it says there's great, great benefit and it can eradicate sinful life. So through this purification process, one develops increasing attraction for the holy name. It's described that there are two effects of chanting. One, that it clears one of all past sinful activity, as we've been describing. And the second is that it simultaneously increases one's love of God. So our focus, while certainly we're interested and concerned about ending up clearing our sinful reactions and becoming purified, for most of us, we tend to want to develop our attraction for Krishna simultaneously, along with that. And we want to become attracted to Krishna's name, to Krishna's form, to Krishna's deity form, to his service, to his prasadam, to everything about Krishna. But of course, that requires that one first does the cleansing process, purifying process of sadhana. You can't artificially jump to it. Oh, now I'm just going to relish Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan without doing the preliminary work, the preliminary sadhana. And as sadhana increases, it becomes more and more advanced and becomes more spontaneous towards Rupanuga, Raganuga Bhakti. But that comes about, not artificially, but as a natural process as one advances in Krishna consciousness. So then one is able to more and more relish the holy name and appreciate it, and appreciate our relationship with Krishna. So I wanted to finish here with a very beautiful verse and purport of Srila Prabhupada's from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 2.2. And this emphasizes more the attraction part of it, the second part of the value. I'm not sure what the meter is on these verses, so I'll just give it my wing it here. Krishna Kirtana Gana Nartana Kala Potajani Rajita Sad Bhaktavali Hamsa Chakramadu Pati Shreni Vaharaspadam Karnanadi Kalad Panir Bahatome Jiva Maru Prangane Sri Chaitanya Daya Nidhe Tava Ala Lila Shuda Svardhani. I'll have to ask you how to chant that for this sometime.
Yeah, it's just like the first verse of the Bhagavad.
Oh, okay, you just kind of keep going until it ends. Okay. Anyway, the translation. Oh, my merciful Lord Chaitanya, may the nectarine Ganges water of your transcendental activities flow on the surface of my desert-like tongue. Beautifying these waters are the lotus flowers of singing, dancing, and loud chanting of Krishna's holy name, which are the pleasure abodes of unalloyed devotees. These devotees are compared to swans, ducks, and bees. The river's flowing produces a melodious sound that gladdens their ears. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Our tongues always engage in vibrating useless sounds that do not help us realize transcendental peace. The tongue is compared to a desert, because a desert needs a constant supply of refreshing water to maintain it fertile and fruitful. Water is the substance most needed in the desert. The transient pleasure derived from mundane topics of art, culture, politics, sociology, dry philosophy, poetry, and so on, is compared to a mere drop of water, because although such topics have a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure, they are saturated with the modes of material nature. Therefore, neither collectively nor individually can they satisfy the vast requirements of the desert-like tongue. Despite crying in various conferences, therefore, the desert-like tongue continues to be parched. For this reason, people from all parts of the world must call for the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who are compared to swans swimming around the beautiful lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or bees humming around his lotus feet in transcendental pleasure, searching for honey. The dryness of material happiness cannot be moistened by so-called philosophers who cry for Brahman, liberation, or similar dry speculative objects. The urge of the soul proper is different. The soul can be solaced only by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his bona fide devotees who never leave the lotus feet of the Lord, become imitation Mahaprabhus, that cling to his lotus feet like bees that never leave honey soaked the lotus flower. Now the final verse, very important. The final paragraph. Lord Chaitanya's movement of Krishna consciousness is full of dancing and singing about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. It is compared herein to the pure waters of the Ganges, which are full of lotus flowers. The enjoyers of these lotus flowers are the pure devotees who are like bees and swans. They chant like the flowing of the Ganges, the river of the celestial kingdom. The author desires such sweetly flowing waves to cover his tongue. He humbly compares himself to materialistic persons who always engage in dry talk from which they derive no satisfaction. Yes, if they were to use their dry tongues to chant the holy name of the Lord, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, as exemplified by Lord Chaitanya, they would taste sweet nectar and enjoy life. Jai Prabhupada. Thank you very much for your patience. Tridita Prabhu?
Yes.
Hari Bol. So, this being Bhadra Purnima, and it'll be a nice ceremony of glorifying the Bhagavad Gita tonight. Unfortunately, I won't be here. I'll be in Gainesville. But I'd like to share one little pastime, fairly unknown, because it's in the production of this final 110 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita that Srila Prabhupada left for us, including what we just read. It had slowed to a crawl. There was various impediments and wasn't coming out. This is, we're going back to Miami in the mid-80s. I'm not sure what year this was, 84, 85. And so our production manager, Dinesh Prabhu, he suggested that we worship Srimad Bhagavatam. And so we went up to the temple room, and it was just four or five of us, those who were part of the production crew, which included Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, I think Rita Narmaj was traveling, and we had the layout man. Oh, Grahela Prabhu was there, the indexer. And we set up some of the volumes of the Bhagavatam, both that had already been printed, through the Prabhupada's and others that we had already printed, in the middle of the temple room, and we did an RT, and we were chanting Hare Krishna, and then we circumambulated this little altar, Bhagavatam, and we prayed ardently that the Bhagavatam give us mercy and please that it may come out. And it took a few more years, but it manifested and came out. So I just wanted to share that since this is the auspicious day of worshiping Bhagavatam.
Thank you.
Dineshwar.
Prangavinda.
I'm just going to make a small announcement and then I have a question. Question, comment. Thank you for ending the Bhagavatam such a sweet way. Your class is wonderful. But to celebrate this day, we'll throw a little, after the worshipping of Bhagavatam, we'll have a Bhagavat snack, prasadam, dinner snack or something like that. I don't know how you word it. We'll have a hot tea, and Shankar Prabhu is making, and pop rice, and some cauliflower pakoras. So we'll do this, and we'll have a nice party of Bhagavatam, because when you celebrate something, there should be a party. So there will be nice prasadam for everybody after that. Tonight, 6 o'clock we'll start with bhajan, but 6:30 we'll do the aarti. By 7:15 it will be over, and then we'll have prasadam.
So you got some interest when you mentioned the prasadam.
Yeah. I was thinking, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he his grain ceremony was taking place, and his grandfather Nilambar Chakravarti was well known astrologer at that time, and so they put baby Nimai, and they put lots. They put Brahmins, Kshatriya, even the
born in a Brahmin family, but by profession,
they put all these symbols. So baby Nimai started crawling, and some of the
smart Brahmin, they bought the Vedic
Vedas,
and they put all
kinds of Vedas, and they put. Was one
who put Srimad Bhagavatam at the end in a corner because the Vedic Brahmanas were
like prominent figure.
So then Nimai started crawling, and after crawling he came all the way to the Veda, and then everybody cheering, but he didn't. He came close, but he turned around, and then he went to all the way to Bhagavatam, and he took the Bhagavatam.
Because we don't have the speaker working, he was saying was that during the first grain ceremony, when they do the, you know, the different paraphernalia for what the baby will choose, that they put the Bhagavatam way over in the corner, but Nimai went all the way over there and grabbed the Bhagavatam and held it to his chest.
And he started rolling.
Sorry.
Now I have a question is that you have presented very nicely that it's
That chanting is the most important. But then in practical sense, I was thinking, because recently I'm also counseling some sannyas candidate. They appoint me to counsel them. And while we are progressing in spiritual path, in a practical experience, that there are sometime in the heart, not sometime, most of the time, inner current of devotional service propensity is there, I notice. Also, outer current towards sense enjoyment is also there simultaneously. So, constant require focusing, choosing which one to focus. I have a taste of sense enjoyment, and I have a taste of
spiritual chanting, devotional
service. So constant that choice is there, and I have to constantly focus that I want to advance in spiritual life. I want to do this. So that choice has to be there. And then Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur also say, without the association of advanced devotee, to get out of that stage, extremely difficult. So my point is, chanting is, yes, I agree, but sadhu sangha is also seems like a more important to get out of that stage, because a lot of devotee, most of the devotee, get stuck with this inner current service and outer current sense enjoyment simultaneously.
So you're saying the association of devotees is so important, and
those who got out of it.
Yeah. Well, we know that the spiritual master, the guru, is one who gives one the mantra, right? In other words, the holy name. You know, we call it Harinam initiation, right? You know, in other words, the holy, the names of the chanting is given by the guru. So, absolutely. association of the guru and saintly people is essential, you know, for one's successful chanting. You know, that's certainly there.
Don't forget Shushu Shro Shadadhanatya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahatsevyavaka Punityatana Shevanat. If you're going to get this sword of remembrance, Yadunyasya Yukta, by which you can cut off all the ignorance, you have to serve the spiritual master who then get the taste for hearing. And once you get the taste for hearing, then you can become very focused in that.
Yeah, I mean, we know there are 9 processes of devotional service, and it's not to minimize the hearing and chanting associated with devotees others, but today's verse was about Nam Sankirtan, so I was putting special emphasis on it. Obviously, all these processes are important.
Yeah. But I have to, can I make one editing? Can I do editing? Because the verse is not only about chanting, but the second part, pranamo dukkha shamanat, by offering obeisances unto whom one gets fear of misery. Hare Krishna.
Whoever. And then after that, let's go over the other side of the sukkata.
Of the Bhagavatam on this auspicious day, is this going on at all centers around ISKCON or just here?
It's become more and more popular. I think Vaisheshika Prabhu has sort of spread it around. I know in North America, a lot of the temples are doing this.
Today in Vrindavan, they're celebrating a huge festival for Allah.
Are they? In Vrindavan too?
Radha,
okay.
Radha Govinda Maharaj arranging that.
Nice.
So when you were reading the purport and, you know, going through, like, you can't find any pleasure. You know, there's no pleasure in conferences or poetry or this or that. Or, you know what I mean? The whole long list of things that there's no, we're not interested in, there's no pleasure in. I thought that, especially as a beginning devotee, it can be very difficult because it's like, you know, you don't do this, you don't do that, you don't do this, you don't do that. But in Prabhupada's life, we saw how he saw everything as Krishna. He would sometimes quote poetry, you know, Shakespeare or Cowper saying that the city is made by man, you know, the country is made by God, or you're just appreciating nature and how. So I think it's so important because sometimes people can kind of get themselves in a box and not really be able to see Krishna and everything, but it's a material world. It's true and it's temporary.
There's
so much, so many ways to see Krishna.
I think it's very important because if one takes almost like too severe or fanatical type of attitude, then one can't really maintain that. And then the tendency is like, oh, well, I can't really do it, so I'll just revert to materialism or to sense gratification. Or one becomes, tries to be so overly austere, you know, and actually the acharyas describe that leads one's heart to become hard, and that's actually not conducive to bhakti. But that used to be there. You say, well, of course, we all have a difficulty, but I remember when back to 72, when the first times I was going out in Sankirtan with devotees, how they all pile in the van, you know, you're all sitting on the hard floor, it's not even a seat, you know. So we're in some cargo van or whatever. I mean, but it has window. And one devotee was kind of looking out the window, and one of the more senior devotees, who'd probably been a devotee for a whole year, you know, snapped at him. Don't look out the windows, it's all Maya. Well, you know, like, how do you not look at it? And he keep your eyes closed, you know. No. And it's exactly, and your point was exactly right. We have to learn to see everything in relationship to Krishna. Remember that book, On the Way to Krishna, and there's a really nice chapter that says how to see Krishna everywhere and always. And Prabhupada talks about that, and he gives examples. The taste of water is Krishna. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, there's so many verses in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, in a couple, two different chapters have those kind of things. So, that's the whole thing, is to try to see in relation to Krishna. And of course, Prabhupada described this process what he called dovetailing. That in the beginning, this is what one does. One tries to, whatever we like to do or we're attracted to, we do for Krishna. You see, how do we work Krishna? In the beginning, it's kind of like, this is what I'm going to do, how do I work Krishna into it? As we get more advanced, it's more, what does Krishna want and how can I use my propensities to serve Krishna? But either way, it works, you know. And I noticed some devotees I noticed early on, they seemed to be like they were having fun or they're having a pretty good time. They weren't miserable. Somehow they had learned how to work Krishna into everything. So it wasn't really Maya, but they weren't, you know, suffering.
Krishna is in everything.
Yeah, because Krishna is in everything.
And besides that, it's like there's the book Bhagavat, and then there's the person Bhagavat, which is Prabhupada. That's why it always seems like it's equally important to study Prabhupada's life and the way he handled all different kinds of situations and how he saw things for us to really understand, you know, that Krishna is everywhere. He's in every living entity, and it can be very joyful to even be in the material world if we're seeing Krishna everywhere.
Yeah, and in the beginning, if we only see Krishna, I'm here in the temple, this is great. That's neophyte, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's Kanishta, not to see Krishna and the devotees, you know, and that's the other thing. You know, sometimes if you know, I love Krishna, but I don't like the devotees, or I'm, you know, I don't treat them nicely. That's neophyte, right?
But you know,
Satan.
Go ahead.
Two mothers. Those writers and poets, even though it's quote unquote materialistic, they are looking for God, mm-hmm. like through their writing. You know, they're searching for God. So if we can see it in that light, you know, their own way. But I was going to ask. Is it a coincidence that we finished the Bhagavatam on Vajrapurnim? Was that a coincidence, or...?
It actually was a coincidence. I mean, it... No, I arranged that. No. I did arrange to give this class. I requested to give the last class. And it was a coincidence that it ended on Vajrapurnim. Coincidence? It was somehow Krishna's arranged. We don't have coincidences. Anyway, it was a fortuitous... you know, bringing together of auspicious circumstances.
I was going to say, I mean, I respect Mother Sukada's opinion and all other, but I just hear this class of Prabhupada. Just to say Krishna is everywhere in everything.
That is what? You broke
first class devotee's vision. It is not anybody just come to Krishna consciousness, he started seeing Krishna is everywhere. Not possible. Sarva bhuteshu japasyat bhagavat bhavam atmana. This is first class devotee's definition by sloka. So, that's first class, Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada, I was very like, wow. Prabhupada said, so are you seeing this everywhere? Are you seeing Krishna everywhere? No. Then why you are quoting this? So first you come to this point, I was very thrilled the way Prabhupada handled. He said, first you come to Krishna consciousness, take shelter of the holy name, and follow the rules, regulation, sadhana bhakti. And then he says, then you develop to the
discriminating power.
Without discriminating power, nobody can just say, oh, Krishna is everywhere, we should see Krishna everywhere. I was like, wow.
And you have to remember that Prabhupada was dealing with very neophyte devotees. We're still neophyte. I'm still a neophyte devotee, but we were even more neophyte 40 years ago, 45 years ago. And devotees would have a tendency to kind of jump anywhere. Or it's kind of like if we could ever find like a wiggle room, or you know, some, you know, to bring in something, our own, you know, conditioning or material things, we would tend to do it. So Prabhupada often had to be real strict on those things, you know. Say, no, you know, this is, don't try to bring this in. Don't try to, you know, just stay with Krishna consciousness, because we would have, you know, we would have come up with a hodgepodge, probably some smorgasbord of quasi spiritual activity, given, you know, on our own devices. Yeah.
So, but it also says, like in Bhagavad Gita, "Tata vibhutimat sattvam shrimadurjitam veva bhava." Know that all, you know, mighty, beautiful creations come but from a spark of my splendor. So it doesn't have to be complicated, like you're actually seeing Krishna, but it's just that everything you see that's beautiful, that is Krishna's manifestation. That all of that is. And that really helps people, you know what I mean, to be able to not have to renounce everything, like all beauty. No, that all the beauty is,
you know,
Krishna.
And the thing is, it's also trying to do that, even if we're not really on that stage, it's very good practice. Like sometimes, like if you go to the ocean, you go to the beach, you know, like sometimes, you know, someone will say, oh, you know, this is actually a place of pilgrimage because Lord Ramachandra touched the oceans and all the oceans are connected. And in other words, it's, you know, am I realizing Lord, you know, Ramachandra's presence and his feet? No, probably not, but we try to remember, right? That's part of our process. You know, we try to, like you're saying, we try to think of these things, and that actually raises our consciousness rather than just seeing it materially. So yeah, I agree with you. And I think all you're saying is that, you know, you or others have maybe developed a little bit of vision on this after so many years, you know, that you start thinking that way more and more.
Ms. Smith, and also just seeing how Prabhupada lived and how much he appreciated so many different things. The world, because it's creation. So I just think it's very helpful. Not, you know, you have to be a Mahabhagavat to do that. It's like everything that's wonderful, everything that's beautiful, that's all coming from
yeah.
Krishna.
Yeah, and
don't see the tree, see Krishna.
Right.
Like the universal form.
Well, you know, it's
the ocean is Krishna.
Well, you know what that chapter is called in the Bhagavatam about Vrata-rupa. It's called the first step in God realization, right? So in other words, it's not the final, but it's the beginning, you know. And even if one's more advanced, one still tries to see in that way, you know. And at the same time, the devotee knows that the material creation is not all in all, and is tries to focus on, you know, Krishna's spiritual nature and pastimes, etc. But like you say, it's hard artificially do that, you know. Anyway.
Well, I was just gonna say to Mother. They think there's a difference between seeing Krishna everywhere and in everything and enjoying matter. So we're not enjoying matter
right.
by seeing Krishna everywhere. It's like a distinction.
Yeah, in fact, I would say, to emphasize that, that's how we don't just enjoy matter. In other words, that's our process. You know, like, I'm kind of attracted to nature. You know, I go out in a beautiful area or go to some place where it's very beautiful, you know, and my natural sensory apparatus is just, oh, this is beautiful. So I try to remember, you know, why this is coming from Krishna. And even remember, you know, even that, well, yeah, but, you know, underneath there's this competition, you know, of one living entity eating, you know, its food for another living entity. And there's the downside to it, too. But that all beautiful, mighty, and glorious creations bring but a spark and a splendor. So yeah, I think if we do try to remember this way and we become conscious of it, it does protect us from becoming overly enamored or allured by the material energy. Good points. Okay, it is 9:00. We should probably end. It's past 9:00. Thank you so much. Our Guru Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai, Vajra Pranima Ki Jai.